bound.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with you. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. Canucks Talk also brought to you by Applewood Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi's 10-year, 160,000-kilometer powertrain warranty is bold, but they have over 100 years to back it up. Details at Applewood Mitsubishi in the Richmond Auto Mall. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Now very pleased to be joined on the show. She covers the Canucks for the Canadian Press. She is our pal, Gemma Karsten-Smith. Gemma, thank you as always. How are you? Have you caught your breath after the madness of yesterday?
I have not. I'm working on about 2 hours of sleep, but I have made it back to Vancouver. So.
Oh, congrats.
Win.
Well
Win.
Done. You hustled back.
Thank you. I did. I left my flight out of Nashville was at 5 a.m. Nashville time.
Amazing.
Which for those of you at home is 3 a.m. Vancouver time. So I've been up for a while.
Are you a good plane sleeper?
I usually am, but today was not a good plane sleeping day. But you know what? I got to go watch that really crazy game in Nashville. So can I complain? No, I really cannot.
So what were you were there obviously covering the game, and then you had a chance to, you know, talk to the players, talk to Rich Hockett after the game. Give me a vibe check. What were the vibes after that miraculous comeback and victory for the Canucks?
Bewildered a little bit. I don't know that anyone really I don't think it had fully sunken in. What just happened here? They know that they stole one, right? The Canucks were not the better team for the majority of that game. But the resilience that this group has shown all year is what we saw at the end, and that's what mattered, right? You just got to make one more save than the other guys, and that's what happened. So it was a wild affair. I don't usually like covering those games because it's a big pain to rewrite your entire story in the last 5 minutes. But that was actually a really fun one. And the crowd was into it. Everyone was into it. And the Canucks have worked hard this year. So good to see them get rewarded a little bit.
Well, it was funny, too, because, you know, they tie it up and I was at the Halford and Bruff watch party at the Hollywood Theater. And, you know, I was there with a couple of friends and it's going to overtime. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get another round of beers, you know, settle in here for the long haul. And then, actually just 1 minute in, a minute and 2 seconds in. And they finished the smash and grab job. What was your big takeaway from listening to head coach and talking to head coach Rick Tocchet after the game?
The prevailing message was we can be excited about this one, but we have to be better. And I think that's true. Tocchet wants to see them a lot stronger on the forecheck and a lot better through the neutral zone. And I think that that's absolutely a fair critique. We know that this is not a team that's been getting enough shots on goal. And if those shots are going in the back of the net, does it really matter? No, but you're not getting all of them in the back of the net. So this team needs to be generating more chances. They still need some players to come alive. Brock Besser was the absolute hero yesterday. JT Miller was in on all three of Brock's goals. Quinn Hughes seemed to emerge from his team-induced what's the word I'm looking for? He was obviously in a lot of pain,
yes.
But he seemed to weather it towards the end of the third there and get a bit of a jump. So we're seeing some of the big stars come out to play, but we know that there are still other faces that need to pop and find their own place in this series. So I think those are the messages, that they still need guys to come out and have a big game, and they also need to be better going into game five tomorrow.
Yeah, and you mentioned Quinn Hughes, and I thought that was fascinating yesterday. Kind of summed up in a way, the whole game, right? Because he was so ineffective, really a shadow of himself, of what he normally is able to do. And we saw, you know, the big double hit, and he's in distress going to the bench. And then the final 3 minutes, he doesn't leave the ice. He makes some phenomenal plays, including that, you know, that incredible deke on Nyquist on the tying goal to set up the tying goal. Like, he looked like Quinn Hughes, or like the, you know, the real Quinn Hughes, for bursts there at the end. And that was absolutely vital. But, you know, as you mentioned, right, like the giveaways through the neutral zone, the trouble breaking out, really, really noticeable yesterday. And I think that contributes to, you know, not getting in on the forecheck, not being able to establish yourself in the offensive zone. But how much of those problems, right, the breakout, the neutral zone turnovers, are mostly, or to what degree are they just, you know, Quinn Hughes not being his normal, excellent Quinn Hughes self?
I think what you're seeing is someone who's obviously dealing with an injury, but also a team in the Predators that has game planned for Quinn Hughes, right? They're the surprise. We knew going into the series that they were getting game plan for Quinn Hughes, the same way that the Canucks have game plan to shut down Yossi and have done that quite effectively through the first four games. That said, they haven't found a way to break Hughes out, and they have to, because he is such a vital part of the team, and he's a vital part of the offense as well, right? And we saw what happens last night. We saw what happens when you can get him going in those situations. So I think it's partially that they need to find a way to help him, and partially that he needs a little bit of rest here. I think that because of that, it would be just lovely if they could get a win tomorrow and get him a little bit of a R&R heading into a potential second round matchup.
Yeah, Game 5, absolutely huge. Nobody, I mean, I know Nashville is supposed to be a lovely city. I've never been, but I've only heard great things. But nobody wants to make that trip back to Nashville for a possible Game 6. So huge stakes for the Canucks to try to close it out tomorrow. What did you think of Artur Shelov's performance? And then also just, you know, he seems to have this kind of aura of calmness about him, right? I know he's been through a really high pressure situation representing his country at the World Championships and performed incredibly well there, but it was pretty striking, you know, hearing him talk after the game, seeing his performance, just how unrattled he seemed to be by the situation yesterday.
Truly incredible. I don't know how he does it, because I think I was like more nervous about covering a game. And not that I'm like nervous to cover a game, but you know, just like that anxiety of like being in that atmosphere and the energy of the rink and all that. It just like you get some adrenaline moving and get a little pumped and like, that's the technical term, by the way. But he doesn't seem to be impacted by that at all. He's like, after the game, he's just like, yep, all good. Like, it's actually bananas. Kid is sitting in the locker room with a literal ice pack on his head between periods. It's something else. I think ice may run in his veins, truly. That's just how they do in Latvia, I guess. But no, he had a really strong game yesterday. What I was impressed by was the way when he stopped pucks and they came loose a little bit, he was on them right away. His rebound control was quite good. I thought that he had a great performance for his first NHL playoff game. That's excellent. And the fact that he's only had four appearances with Vancouver this season, I don't think you could ask for much more of him than what you saw last night.
Well, and it's interesting because now obviously the conversation turns to who do they start in Game 5. And, you know, after Game 2 that Casey DeSmith lost, I don't think it was his fault at all, even though he had some shaky moments in that game, you know, there were a lot of fans calling for, hey, go to Artur Shelov's in Game 3. And, you know, Drance and I were talking and saying, look, if you do that, it's going to be really hard to go back to DeSmith if you need him at any point, right? The fact that you're already, if you do that move, you're in a sense giving up on DeSmith after Game 1 and, you know, you're basically riding with Shelov's at that point. To spin this into kind of a positive for the Canucks, the fact that they were able to go to Shelov's, right, but they had a very legitimate reason in a DeSmith injury, it feels like their options are completely open now, right? Like that they can easily go to Shelov's or DeSmith without, you know, offending or damaging the confidence of either one and still having both guys available going forward. What do you think they will do? What do you think they should do going into Game 5?
Are you telling me there's a goalie controversy in Vancouver?
It's so quickly too. Like as soon as Shelovs gets promoted to backup goalie, he should go in.
Yeah, it's this market is so funny. I love it. I think what I was saying to a reporter in Nashville yesterday, I guess, all of the days are running together. The difference between Shelov's top level and DeSmith's top level is not massive. So if you have DeSmith playing at like an 80% or you have a fully healthy Shelov, then go with Shelov's, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you're probably going to get about the same, right? So I think the question really is what is ailing Casey DeSmith? And how close to 100% is he? I think that if he is closer to 100% than he was yesterday, you go with DeSmith, just because he does have that veteran presence. He has been in this situation. He's now got 3 playoff games as opposed to Shelov's 1 playoff game. But he was great in game 3, I thought. I thought he had a great game. Like you said, I thought that game 2 was not his fault. I think that if you can ride DeSmith, you do. But to have Shelov as your alternative is what an excellent problem to have. This is not – if you had said the third-string goalie is going to come in game 4, I think this market would have gone bananas. And to have it work out this way is the best-case scenario. This Canucks team is only the second team in NHL history to do this, to get their first 3 wins of a series with 3 different goalies. And the first team to do it was also the Canucks back in 2004.
And I believe they're the first team even since that Canucks team to even start 3 goalies in a playoff series, which is remarkable. And Gemma, and I mentioned this earlier, but they've set an NHL record for fewest shots on goal through the first 4 games of a series. Both of those stats are true, and yet they lead 3-1. It is absolutely ridiculous how this series has played out. And, you know, a big part of the reason why they lead 3-1 is Brock Besser, who records the hat trick, 2 late goals, just phenomenal efforts. I mean, especially on that tying goal, the persistence, the second effort, the angle he finishes it from. This is I don't want to say star-making performance for Brock Besser because, you know, he had the 40 goals. But for all the twists and turns that Brock Besser's career arc has taken in Vancouver, like, this is the moment that people are waiting for Brock Besser to be in a big moment for the Canucks, a playoff series, and show that he can be a game-breaker, that he can be a difference-maker for them.
What an incredible storyline he has been this season. Like, from opening night all the way through, I am here for the Brock Besser Redemption Tour, and we have seen it.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy for him. This has been a long time coming. This is truly a guy who has put in the work and is reaching his potential. And couldn't happen to a nicer kid, honestly. So here for it. Like I said, he's put in the work. He worked really hard this offseason. He changed his workout routines. He's done a lot of what the staff here in Vancouver have asked of him, and you're seeing it pay off. This is what happens, right? You find him the right teammates. He's got such a good chemistry with Miller, the way that they've worked off each other. And I think you saw it last night. There's a reason that they combined on all 3 of those goals, right? Mm-hmm. They work so well together. And I think that if they can continue this performance through the rest of the playoffs, Vancouver's going to have a real good run.
Okay, on the negative side of things, Elias Pettersson's play continues to be a talking point. I know Rick Dhaliwal mentioning earlier today that, you know, he's hearing Pettersson is dealing with something, banged up. Now, that's not a surprise. Like, we can all see how his game looks right now. It's kind of something you might expect to hear. But, you know, on the other hand, like, I don't want to sound like a sports radio cliche here, but if you're on the ice during the playoffs, like, this time of year is about finding a way to be effective, finding a way to help your team, even when you're dealing with some bumps and bruises. Like, we saw that again with Quinn Hughes last night, right? The way he's able to kind of dig down and find those moments. Like, what can the Canucks do short of just keep giving him his minutes and keep hoping that he breaks out of it with Elias Pettersson right now?
Yeah, I think that's really it. Keep giving him his minutes and hope that he breaks out. But, like, it sounds so, like, you're almost throwing your hands up in the air like, oh, what more can we do here?
Yep.
But honestly, like, they've tried different line combinations. They've tried all sorts of stuff, and it's just not working. So, again, maybe some time off would help. Probably. Yeah.
A reset?
I would be stunned if he's not dealing with something. But I think that he could take a little mental break as well. I think that a large part of this for Pettersson is mental. You're seeing him lose confidence almost in real time. The way that he's handling the puck is completely different. The way that he's hesitating on shots. And that's, you can't be having that at this point of the season. This is big boy hockey. And to have those hesitations, you're going to get bumped off the puck. You're going to get stripped. You're going to get shut down. And you've seen the Predators shut Pettersson down. He came into the series with a little bit of a lack of confidence. And it's just, that hole has gotten deeper and deeper as the series has worn on.
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is, I mean, you've already seen him basically be de facto demoted to third line center, right? With obviously Miller being the first guy, and then really Lindholm has become the second line center. And, you know, with the way Miller and Besser are playing and how Pew Suter has complimented them, and the Lindholm line has done it in moments. Obviously, the OT winner, the big Joshua goal. I don't know that they've been super consistently effective, but I think there's still something there you can build on. I just don't know how much juggling you can afford to do to get Pettersson going. I think, you know what I mean? Like, you got to keep those two lines, which have been effective together, and just kind of cross your fingers with Pettersson.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't have an answer. If I did, I'd probably be making a lot more money. But that's the thing. Like, you've only got so much wiggle room in the playoffs. This is not a time to be experimenting. The time to be experimenting was in the regular season. And there were times when you saw him find his top gear. So he needs to find it now. It has to be a little bit more on him, and all the coaching staff can do is keep doing what they've been doing. So, personally, I'd keep him on the power play. I'd try and just, like a bad cramp, you just have to work it out here.
By the way, Gemma, before I let you go here, I got to ask, what's the Nashville Predators car flag situation?
You know what? I forgot to tweet about this. I only saw one car with car flags while I was in Nashville, and it was right outside the rink. Nashville, like, their fans do not mess around. But they are also not, they're my people because they are not fans of car flags. So I'm into it.
Every time we have you on now, we get people texting in. We got this one. Please, may you please tell Gemma that Canucks car flags are out in full force. Also, I saw a car sporting four car flags and two.
Oh my God. That's too many car flags.
Two large door magnets. So door magnets are the next big thing, apparently.
Oh my gosh. I can't.
The
even.
Next
I
thing
can't.
For you to be annoyed by. All right. Thank you, Gemma. Always appreciate it. And, congrats on making it back to Vancouver. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
That is Gemma Karstensmith covering the team for the Canadian Press and weighing in on just what it was like to be there and talk to the team. And she used the word describing the emotional response from the team afterwards, bewildered. And I think that kind of sums up my perspective in a lot of ways, or at least my in-the-moment perspective, right? Like, I tweeted it after the game. I just couldn't stop laughing. I was like, how did that happen? It was one of the funniest results. I mean, incredible. And this incredible emotional high, but also stepping back, just one of the funniest results sequences I've seen in a hockey game in a long, long time. So bewildered, I think, kind of sums it up pretty well here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Terry Y texts in, Hughes's performance last night epitomizes the team's embrace the pain rhetoric. If you read his lips while he was on the bench regrouping from that big sandwich hit, he mouths the words, I'm okay. It's not clear if he was speaking to anyone or just talking to himself, but his actions leading to the tying goal embodies the motto. I think that's a good point, right? Obviously, Quinn Hughes is nowhere close to 100%, nowhere close to peak physical condition right now. We all saw it. And yet, as Terry says, still able to play through the pain and make those types of plays late in that game to help the team get the win. Lots of people texting in here about Elias Pettersson. This one, it's time to bench Pettersson for a game and put in Podkolzin. They're not benching Pettersson right now. The injury thing is fascinating. And you know, again, Rick Dhaliwal earlier today reporting he's hearing that Petey is dealing with something, but also saying that it wasn't necessarily anything major. So who knows the degree to which it's affecting him? He's in the lineup. They haven't given really any indication that they're going to take him out of the lineup. I don't think that's realistic unless the injury gets significantly worse. And in terms of reducing his role, that's happened. As I said to Gemma, like, he's the third line center right now. The first two lines are the Miller line and the Lindholm line. And I don't know how far the Canucks can go with those two as your first two lines and not getting anything from Elias Pettersson, who, by the way, I don't think he even had a shot attempt at 5-on-5 last night, which is obviously just, you know, that sums it up right there. That's not what you need from Elias Pettersson. I don't know how far they can go with this. I do think they can beat Nashville. I think they can beat Nashville tomorrow with Miller and Lindholm as your top two centers. And, you know, Elias Pettersson is basically a wild card or a mystery box on the third line. And I think that's the play right now, right? And if you're Nashville and you're, you know, trying to control the matchup game as much as you can on the road tomorrow, well, the two lines that you're prioritizing, number one, it's JT Miller and Brock Besser, because they've been the line that's doing the damage. They've been the line that's looked consistently dangerous. Number two is probably Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua, because while it hasn't been there shift by shift, you've still seen what they can do. When they do get the puck below the goal line and Garland gets onto it, he's a really dangerous playmaker from that spot. He can make you pay. So you got to have that line second. And then it's like, okay, well, we'll try to win that matchup with Elias Pettersson with Colton Sissons and Jason Zucker and Anthony Beauvillier, which they've been doing. But again, if those are the minutes and that's the matchup that Elias Pettersson is consistently getting, I don't think you can ask for much more in terms of good spots for Elias Pettersson if you're the Canucks. And we can have the line mate conversation. Again, I don't see a lot of sense to juggling things right now. Keep the two lines that have at least looked good in moments in this series together. I know we have people texting in saying move Hoglander up with Miller and Besser, drop Pugh Suter down. I don't know what that's going to do to get Petey going, and I don't think you need to get Miller and Besser going any more than they already are in this series. So I think you take that kind of soft matchup, you keep him with Hoglander, you try to get him those offensive zone starts, and you basically wait for him to play himself out of it, because that's what this is going to take. He's too talented to keep playing like this for a long stretch, depending on the injury factor. And he's got to find his way out of it here for the Canucks to go on a long playoff run. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dan in Fort St. John says, I was perusing Preds Reddit yesterday. Everyone on there is blaming Saros for the state of the series. Sure, his save percentage isn't great, but the Preds are giving up a lot of grade A's. Well, I wouldn't say the Preds are giving up a lot of grade A's. They're ending up in the back of the net, but I don't think this is on Saros whatsoever. Yeah, his save percentage is bad. There's no doubt about that. But how many of those goals yesterday do you fault him on? Like the Preds defense got carved up in front of him in all four of those goals. Now, is it possible to make saves on some of them? Sure. They're not like no chancers necessarily. Although on the Besser 3-2 goal, I mean, he comes very, very close. He goes off his skate, I think. Like, he almost makes a miraculous save on that one. But the problem with any of those goals, it's not on Saros. It's on the defensive breakdowns that are happening in front of him to produce those chances. So the Canucks need to generate more. Would you love to see a save or two sprinkled in there for Saros if you're a Preds fan? Sure, but I don't think they can put that on Saros. I mean, I think if anything, we're talking about the defensive breakdowns in big moments, but also, like, take your chances. When you've got a team reeling on the ropes, like you had the Canucks in the third period, don't let them hang around. Don't leave the door a sliver open for them to make a miraculous comeback. Leave no doubt. And the Preds did not do that. They were not able to do that against the Canucks last night. I think that's the biggest problem. That lack of killer instinct for the Nashville Predators is what could come back to haunt them. Okay, we'll take one final break here. Last segment of the show coming up. We have Rick Tocchet audio on a travel day for the Canucks. So We'll play that for you coming up next. By the way, Canucks coverage here, Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. Keep those texts coming in. Rick Talkett Audio up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Drancer traveling for most of the show today. He was on the first hour. You can check out the whiteboard on your Canucks Talk podcast feed. He'll be back for all 3 hours in person tomorrow to set up Game 5. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. We'll have a few more minutes to take text to dive into the inbox. Tons of thoughts coming in after that incredible Game 4 comeback victory for the Canucks last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, in Nashville. But first, it was a travel day for the team, but Rick Tocchet still had a chance to catch up with the media. Here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Well, it's like I said after the game, you got to give the guys a lot of credit. Really resilient, obviously. We know, and it's, even as a coach, I don't have to tell them, obviously, our game has to get better. I mean, you know, the players have already said it, so that's great. But the resilience of the group all year, I mean, that's a, you know, that's a tough game to come back from. And, you know, obviously the last 3 minutes in overtime went our way. So can we build off it?
Rick, you guys pulled the goalie, and it seemed instantaneous you had that offense right away. I'm wondering where it was for the first 50 minutes, because you played so well structurally, defensively. Does it get lost sometimes that you're still a really good offensive team?
Yeah, I know it's a, you know, the one thing is we're hanging our hat on is we're kind of hanging there defensively. Like the, you know, our D zone coverage is pretty damn good all year, and that's our fabric for our team. We fought, when we're not playing well, we can fall back on that, try to limit some of the chances. I think offensively it's in our head right now because they are pressuring us, for whatever reason we have some guys. It's freezing, guys, instead of, like, go after it. You know, there's a storm there. Go after the storm. You know, don't run away from it. So they're bringing three in the pile. They're bringing three everywhere. You have to think quicker. You got to move your feet quicker, and you got to be more decisive with the puck. And if I think we do that, you're going to get your chances. But and I'll be honest, and, you know, I'm not picking on players, but it only takes three or four players playing a little bit slow mentally with or their feet to kind of – to make the five-man unit do the same. So I think we got to get, you know, we got to get some guys to think a little quicker and move their feet.
You've had three strong goaltending performances from three different goalies. First off, speak about the job that they've done, and then do you have any surprises for us tomorrow?
Well, first of all, you got to give the, you know, organization the goaltending depth. Even the other guy, I hear he's, you know, I don't know much about him. He's supposed to be good, you know. Trust me, I don't want to put him in. that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the goaltending depth here on the, with the Canucks is outstanding. And then, you know, you got to give credit to all, you know, the organization, Ian Clark and stuff, you know, having guys ready to go. But, yeah, I just felt that even when I told Artie that the day before you're going to play, I mean, it was like, I didn't see much nervousness, you know, and I think he mentioned you guys about playing that Latvia World Championship where he had the whole country on his back. So, you know, he's been there before in certain scenes.
So are you going to wait to see how Casey feels tomorrow? Do you know what you're doing tomorrow? Can you share with us your thoughts?
Well, it goes by hour. We'll see how, Casey is today. We're not making a decision at this moment.
Playoffs are all about adjustments, Rick. Yeah. How much is it a collective thing, and how much falls on Quinn individually to maybe pick his spots better? I know he's a playoff newbie, but he's getting a tremendous amount of attention.
Yeah, and it should be because he's one of the best defensemen, one of the best players in the league, so he's going to get it. Yeah, there's a few adjustments that he has to do, for sure. But, I mean, that last 3 minutes, the way he turned on a dime to keep you know that he's got it, you know. So I think it's a couple adjustments here. And then we can help him too. We got to get in front of people. We can't just let people hit him. We got to get in front of people. And I think if we have the puck a little bit more, he probably won't get hit as much.
I mean, he's the meat in the sandwich early. Comes to the bench. He's doubled over, misses his shift, but then he does what he does at the end. Is there a new level of respect for him from your perspective?
I mean, I've seen him get hit a lot this year. Not a ton, but some really crunching, and I've seen him come to the bench wincing. Just when you're down and out, he's back up. Like, you know, he'll be walking around the next day, no big deal, around town. He's just, he's a tough kid. He really is. He can take a hit. And, I think that was huge, being the captain, taking those licks, and then the last, at the end there, coming up with some big plays for us. That's leadership for me.
You've kept your lines intact relatively throughout the series. You've had the wins, but not a lot of scoring chances. Do you anticipate making some tweaks to your lineup?
Well, we thought about maybe moving a piece here and there, but I think we just got to – it's not tactical stuff. It's just – it's good old-fashioned winning some battles, moving your feet. There's options there. I don't know, maybe shuffling a guy here, maybe down the road, maybe in game, maybe. But I thought JT's line, for the most part, this series, they've done a nice job. You know, Lindholm's job line's been done well. I thought Teddy's line, has been pretty good this series. And I think P's line, I think they're going to come. So I'm not sure shuffling the chairs on the deck is the right thing to do right now.
With RD, is there something that stands out about, he steps into such a tough spot. Is there something about him that stands out that helped him succeed yesterday?
I think he's a quiet kid, but he's got some swagger in him. I don't know, just the way he is. I don't talk to him too much. I don't know him really well, to be honest with you. But I just watch him. He's got the ball in his hand. He's playing, wall ball with his hands, for his eye. He just goes, he's in our meetings, out of our meetings. I don't know what he does. I don't know, but he's just got that, I don't know, it's hard to explain.
He's just ready.
He's just ready. Yeah. He said, you heard him, he said, ready to shine. That was kind of fun to hear him say that.
Have you seen the ice pack on top of his head in the intermissions? He just sits there slumped in the stall with
him. No, I haven't seen it. No. I usually, like I say, I'm a guy that stays away from the goalies. The goalies like to. I'll talk to the forwards and defense, but not goalies.
Playoff history, a lot of. You don't want to let a team off the mat. I'm sure you played the game. You've coached it. Does that add more incentive tomorrow night? You don't want to let those guys off the mat.
Well, from experience, game fives, right, are hard closeout games, right, for whatever reason. And I feel more comfortable going into tomorrow's game because we had an average game, let's face it. And if we played really, really well, a great game, I'd probably be a little bit more nervous tomorrow, but I don't feel nervous. I think we're going to be ready tomorrow to play a lot better than we did last game, and I think that's a good thing.
Do you find that you're getting more guys who are getting into the fight? I looked at your forward line. I thought they played well for you. Mills, he's been so good for you. Brock, I think we're starting to see guys who are crowd performers. And we're still waiting for guys to follow them.
Yeah, for me, the pillars obviously are goaltending, but to me, it's Z, Myers, Susie, Cole's been a monster for it. Those guys stand out. Obviously, Huggy's, on certain times, he's made some big plays for us. I feel all those big guys have really kind of our pillars in this series, I think. Even when, they were coming at us, I think we're holding the fort in front, and I got to give those guys a lot of credit.
Would you like to see Elias shoot the puck more? Because when he attacks, we saw what he did prior to the All-Star break. There's still something there that just seems like we're waiting for him to come back.
Yeah, I think everyone wants the shot. We all want the shot. I just think, if there's one thing, you know, we were talking today, one thing that he's thinking too much about all these different things, just think about moving your feet. If he moves his feet, everything will organically come. And that's, you know, watch, you know, we're going to watch some tape tomorrow, but watch, you know, watch like McKinnon tonight, or if they're playing tonight, or watch McDavid. They move their feet constantly. There are threats everywhere. And if you move your feet, you're especially against a team like Nashville, because if you don't move your feet, they're going to be on you quick. But if you can get out of those with moving your, and then those options will open up. It's just a mindset. It's just a one. It's a one thing. I don't think he should be thinking of 10 things tomorrow.
I asked Tyler what the mood was like, you know, on the plane. He said too much turbulence. You guys are doing rough.
Yeah, it was bad.
Night.
Yeah.
What was the sense? Because
we're used to turbulence in the game. So we're used to that stuff.
What was the sense that you got on the bench when you tied the game and then the dressing room heading out for overtime? Because to me, it looked like you guys smelled blood when you came out in overtime.
Yeah, I think we were like, hey, man, like let's like we can come out of this with a win. I just felt I felt like calmness, even if like guys were happy. We won, everybody's high-fiving. But 5 minutes later, you know, guys are going on the plane. It was like guys are like they're back to earth. Like that's what I love about this team. Nobody's like there's no music going. Guys are cheering and stuff. It was like instant yes, you know, resiliency, good job. But it's like all right, how do we get better? That's what I really respect about this team. All year they've given me that attitude. I don't see a cockiness from this team or a satisfied. I know there's guys that say to themselves, I got to play better. I like that. It's not like they're blaming anybody else. Oh, I need a different line mate or. This guy didn't give me the puck. I don't hear that stuff, and that's a good thing for us.
What about Lindholm and Miller were monsters in the circle last night? Carry that.
Yeah, very rarely you're going to beat Lindholm back to back. Like he's just he's a monster. JT, when you know you're going against O'Reilly, one of the best, and you know some nights it's going to be yours and his. But I thought those two guys were great in the dots.
Rick, you talked a little bit about those bigger defensemen and. Yeah. We see all the big hits, but you talk about physicality a little bit different. What are you liking from those guys in the physical play that they're playing, aside from those big hits that we're seeing?
Well, there's sticks in the middle of the ice. Their interior, the way they defend the interior. Nashville's one of the better teams of getting those pucks behind the net in front. They get a lot of goals this year. I thought we've limited that. So we've had some really good sticks. Getting in the way of people, I thought. As much as they're getting some good – you know, they're off the rush a lot. We're trying to keep them to the outside. And I think that's because of those four guys, the big guys there, keeping them on the outside. I really do.
When we asked Tyler about physicality, he brought up reach. Like, that's something that him and his specific pairing is so well. Like, when you're talking about breaking up things in the center of the ice, how important is it also just, like, breaking up a cycle in the corner? When you have that reach, he said, you don't even have to move that much as long as you have that reach.
Well, the advantage as a big guy, if you get beat real quickly, somehow that stick is another – defender, right? Smaller D, you get beat, you know, they don't have that extra 6-7 inches. Like Myers, you can beat him out of the corner, but somehow he gets a stick on the puck and saves the day. You can say that about Susie has a really good stick. Z, I think, has been his defending is gone. So, you know, you can tell he loves playing playoff hockey. So it's just the technique of it and being in people's way is a big thing for us.
If DeSmith is 100% tomorrow, is there still a decision to be made about who plays?
That's a good question. I don't think anybody's ever 100%. We'll see how close we get to 100% before I make that decision, but nobody's ever 100% in the playoffs.
With Casey, you said you told RD on Saturday.
Yeah.
Was it something that happened in practice, or was it something that happened in the game?
It was a game. Yeah.
Okay. Rick, how bizarre is the situation, though? I mean, it's been 20 years since we've seen three goalies, you know, have to play the
yeah.
playoffs. And I don't start in the playoffs. You said it's going to take all 28 guys to get us to where we want to go, but such a key position. And are you guys, like, staying away from black cats and walking underneath the line? Like, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but I don't, when we were going with Artie and the guys heard it, like, nobody, I mean, I don't know. I don't see anybody walking away going, oh, my God, what's going on around here? I just think, okay, let's go. And I mean, Patrick, I got to talk about Patrick's big thing. When I got signed here, he's a big next man up mentality. He, you know, I think that's one of his big mantras. Like, he doesn't want to hear, well, poor us. Oh, you this. Like, he hates that. So it's when we told him to go with Artie, he was like, okay. And he was just like, where are we going for dinner? Like, when your general manager says that to your coach, I mean, it really gives you confidence. It's not, you know, he's like, oh, what else can go wrong? And, you know, he doesn't give that attitude. So that's Patrick.
How
Who got the game puck after game four?
I don't know. Actually, I didn't go in there after. I wanted them to. It was for them to celebrate. That's a good question. I assume it'd be Lindholm, right? The
overturn. Lindholm, Besser, Seelovs, I was trying.
Yeah,
to
I know. How do you not give it to Besser? Like, I think this game you could probably you get the hacksaw out, right? Give everybody a piece. But yeah, I don't know. I think usually the overtime winner gets it, doesn't? I don't know. I don't know how that works.
First guy up, Thatcher, Vezina, finalist nominee today. What does that mean to him? To the I know he'd rather be playing right now, but what does it mean to him and the organization to get that nod?
Yeah, I think for him, like, he's our rock all year. Even last year when I got here, I knew I had something special. Very businesslike, works his ass off. I don't know. He's a student of the game. You know, he wants it. Like, he's working double time as it is now. And he's around a lot, and the guys can feel his energy. So, yeah, I mean, it's too bad he got hurt because, you know, of course, everybody knew he was going to be the nominee. You know, that's a no-brainer.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet addressing the media after getting back to Vancouver. As you heard there, a little turbulence on the flight, but as Tocchet joked, they're used to turbulence, especially after this series with Nashville. So Tocchet sounding confident ahead of a big Game 5 closeout opportunity for the team. You know, as he said there, like, almost feels less nervous because they played he said average. I think he'd probably even say well below average for their standards game yesterday in Nashville. Makes him feel more confident that they'll raise their level of play and be ready to go. And as he said, play a lot better than they did yesterday in Game 5 tomorrow. Lots of other things to dig into there from Rick Tocchet. And obviously, you know, a lot of conversation and a lot of questions directed to Tocchet about the team's offensive struggles. And as part of that, Elias Pettersson specifically. And, you know, right off the top, listening to Rick Tocchet there, and he says, look, we're in our heads. They're pressuring us. They're bringing three guys everywhere, whether it's on the forecheck, but just to the puck battles in the offensive zone, puck battles really anywhere on the ice. It's a high-pressure system for the Nashville Predators. And, you know, I thought it was interesting to hear Tocchet say, look, I think it's kind of just in our heads. There's some simple things to do there. Think quicker, move your feet quicker, and be more decisive. And as Rick Tocchet said, if there's a storm on the ice, go to the storm. Be a storm chaser. Go out there, get in the battle. And as Tocchet said, you do those things, you're going to have your opportunities, right? Because, of course, if they're committing that much to pressuring a puck battle, if they don't come up with it, necessarily that leaves space elsewhere on the ice. And, you know, I think you even saw that with Connor Garland being able to control the puck down low below the goal line on the overtime winner. Lindholm all alone in front and was able to make them pay to get that Game 4 victory. Now, on Elias Pettersson, the kind of the question of what do you do with him? Do you shuffle things? Do you... how does he get going? Tocchet very much preaching, keep it simple, right? If he moves his feet, everything will come. If you don't move your feet, they'll be on you quick. It's just a mindset, and really suggesting that, yeah, maybe there might be something physical going on, maybe banged up, but Rick Tocchet's saying it's just a mindset thing. Like, this is a mental thing. Even going as far to say, you know, watch McKinnon, watch McDavid, the way those guys move their feet. Now, obviously, Pettersson is not the electric skater that either of those players are, but still, it's not necessarily about just being a blazing fast skater. As Tocchet says, it's about that mentality of moving your feet, of obviously always being engaged and always making that quick play. And, you know, it's not hard to read between the lines, right? When Rick Tocchet's speaking about, hey, some guys have to do this, some guys have to be more engaged, that a lot of that, at least one of those players, probably the most prominent of those players, is Elias Pettersson. So moving his feet, being more decisive, making quicker decisions, that's all it's going to take, at least in Rick Tocchet's view, to get Elias Pettersson going. And, you know, the thing about that is, if there's one player on the team who should be able to process the game at an extraordinarily high level, it's Elias Pettersson. Now, the Canucks have some really, really smart hockey players on the team. Obviously, JT Miller, Brock Besser, we've talked about his hockey IQ. Quinn Hughes, right? Even down the line, guys who aren't as talented, like Ian Cole, a really, really high-level hockey thinker. Elias Pettersson, at his best, is as well. That's one of his greatest skills, is his ability to read the game, his ability to process the game. That's what makes it so jarring when it apparently has deserted him, at least temporarily, in this series. I think Tocchet's right to kind of hammer on that, make your reads quick, process quick, make the next decision quickly, don't hold the puck on your stick. And sometimes that's not going to work out, right? Sometimes if you're really going quick, you'll make the wrong play. But what the Canucks are banking on is more often than not, you'll beat that pressure, right? You'll create a chance for the next player to do something with the puck rather than turning it over, rather than losing it by holding on to the puck for too long. Also, you know, he said they're not sure that a shuffle is necessary because he thinks he has three of his four lines playing pretty well right now. And, you know, no surprise that the line he's referring to, I think, that's not playing pretty well is Elias Pettersson with Höglander and Mikheyev, because even the fourth line yesterday with Blueger, Lafferty, and DiGiuseppe, you know, I thought they had a pretty good game. They had some good fourth line shifts for the Canucks in that game. They actually had three shots at 5-on-5. The fourth line, Lafferty, Blueger, and DiGiuseppe, okay, which is not an overwhelming number, three shots in 7.5 minutes of ice time, but, you know, you look at what the Canucks did for the rest of the game, that's actually pretty decent. The Elias Pettersson line, zero shots on goal in 8.5 minutes of 5-on-5 time. And that, you know, I said the stat earlier about Elias Pettersson not even having a shot attempt at 5-on-5 in that game individually. His line, when they were on the ice together, only had three shot attempts in 8.5 minutes, none of them finding the net. That's just not going to cut it. There needs to be more bottom line. There needs to be more offensive zone time, more danger created, obviously. When even the fourth line is outchancing what you're producing out there with Elias Pettersson on the ice, that is a major, major cause for concern. You know, the other thing that stands out is, and this texter says, interesting that the only D-man talk didn't praise was Hronek. And I don't think that was any slight intended at Philip Hronek. I mean, I think you're all, like, obviously Quinn Hughes in the spotlight after some of the plays he made late, despite struggling earlier in the game. And then, as we know, Tocchet is a big, big fan. He talked about those big four guys on the back end, right? The four below the Hughes and Hronek pairing. Zadorov, Cole, Myers, Soucy, the physicality, the strength, the length that all of them have. We know how much Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote value what those guys can bring, and Rick Tocchet really had a lot of praise for that kind of four-man unit, those two pairs, and the work they can do in the defensive zone. And I think he's right. I mean, one of the things that's stood out in a positive sense for the Canucks in this game is that, or in this series, is at least from a defensive point of view, they don't have a D pair that they have to hide, right? Their second and third pairs, you know, a lot of teams have that third pair that's pretty dicey. You don't want them out there. You really have to find those minutes, those safe minutes for them in a playoff series. The Canucks don't have that. Now you're seeing some of the struggles to break out without Quinn Hughes at his highest level, but in zone, whether it's Zadorov, Cole, Meyer, Soucy, you're pretty confident with either pair out there defending in zone. I think Rick Tocchet, right to point out what a big deal that has been for the team through the first four games of this series. Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Man, I think I finally have bought in. I finally believe that that actually happened, that it was not, in fact, a dream, that the Canucks actually tied that game up with two goals in the final 3 minutes and won it 1:02 to overtime, and now have a 3-1 series lead over the Nashville Predators. They're coming home to try to wrap up a victory tomorrow. It would be the first time they've won a playoff series in front of their home fans since the Western Conference Finals in 2011. It's been a while. They'll have a chance to do it tomorrow. Drancer and I will be on for 3 hours, starting at 11 to get you set up for it. Can't wait. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.